Ladies and gentlemen, it is Wednesday.
About time. It's nice that Wednesday's back.
It is the 2 o'clock hour, Eastern time.
Yes, the 2 o'clock hour, episode 22, as one of my favorite sports announcers of my ute. Used to say, ute.
Yes.
The great, late, great Harry Carey.
Harry Carey.
Holy. Deuces wild.
Holy cow. Cubs win.
It's a shame they didn't win a championship in his lifetime.
I know, but let's face it, by the end, he was so pickled, I don't think he would have noticed.
He would have known. But anyhow, this is not the Harry Carey hour.
Harry Carey here.
No. This is the episode 22, as was already mentioned, of Upon Further Review with...
The Podcast Profs.
And I know you're going to say you're the friendly neighborhood guy, so go ahead.
No, I'm switching it up.
Oh.
I'm channeling the spirit of Jeff Bridges.
Oh, jeez.
No, I'm just being very zen.
Okay.
I am Soren Fanning, and you...
I'm waiting.
Your name.
I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop here. I'm
no,
Anthony
no
Moretti.
No shoes. Yeah, absolutely. You are my good friend Anthony Moretti. Now, we are your helpful host for this.
Oh, I thought you were going to.
No,
he wants to say friendly neighborhood in here, don't you? All right.
I know.
We live in Pittsburgh. We're the home of Fred Rogers. What's wrong with being a friendly neighborhood? Anything.
And that third voice you heard was John Roland, who is producer extraordinaire. And as always, the man who keeps us sane.
Yes, our voice of reason.
Can you imagine the responsibility to keep us sane?
I try not to look in that locked locker. He's. Got
that locked locker?
Yeah.
Good stuff. All right. Now, as you know, we try to theme every week of this podcast. And this week, you are like itching. You're like, come on.
Absolutely.
All right. So what is the theme? And give us your first example.
So the theme for this week is going to be do your job already.
Okay.
Because one thing we have had way too much of over just the past 7 days are... people spending all their time talking about their job without actually, you know, doing their job.
Present company excluded, of course.
Well, of course, because we don't talk about our jobs because we're too busy
doing
our jobs.
Exactly. So
this is why we get all our talking out once a week.
Exactly.
So, but
unless we're in classes.
Well, fair point. And by the way, feel for our producer over there. Because he has a class with me right before this.
You do?
Yeah.
And you still show up smiling?
He does.
Wow.
I don't have any explanation for you.
Just one of those mysteries of the universe.
So it would appear then that he, John Roland, does not have to complain to you, Soren Fanning, about doing your job. You appear to actually do it.
True.
So who doesn't?
Well, let's see. Well, first off, obviously, and I know this is getting repetitive, but we have to talk about the president.
China. Big deal. Going to make big deals.
And honestly, there's like four different directions
Wrong.
I could go in with this.
Wrong.
However.
Wrong. Wrong.
Thing number one. What is, my good friend Anthony, what in your view is the most basic job, the most important responsibility of being president?
Domestically or internationally?
No, just if you had to pick one, like the bare minimum critical, you gotta do this if nothing else.
Not counting a task, all right?
Right.
So in terms of being the president, to me means perhaps above anything else is is revering and respecting the office and the men that came before you. Like their politics, dislike their politics, irrelevant. To respect the office that is the president of the United States.
Right. You are sitting in the office, in some cases in the actual chair.
Where greats have sat.
And
some non-greats.
Right. And some mediocres and some you'll do's. But, you know, that's democracy for you.
You'll do's.
Well, let's face it. We've had a couple of you'll do.
Yeah.
You know, Calvin Coolidge comes to mind. But
that's true.
But who have sat there, and whatever else, it was their primary job to protect this country.
Mm-hmm.
All right. This week.
No collusion.
You had.
No collusion.
The highest level members of our defense establishment, including the head of U.S. Cyber Command.
Yep.
Stating they have not been instructed to take any action to protect the midterm elections that are coming up in, what, 10 months?
little less than that now, because there's a simple reason for this. I don't know why you're getting all worked up about it. The Russians did not meddle in the 2016 presidential election. They're not going to meddle in the 2018 midterm elections. They respect America's democracy, and they respect the president of the United States. Donald Trump says it all the time.
You got to slow down, because too much sarcasm will overload that microphone. I mean, it's just, you got to pace yourself.
I thought you were going to say lies, but that's okay. Sarcasm is being nice. No, all joking aside, I completely agree with you. You know, to me, there's one of two things going on here, and this has been sort of the crux of how we've tried to, as objectively as possible, define the Trump presidency. It is either arrogance or ignorance, and neither is good. It's not that one would be better than the other. It's just that, are we dealing with a man who is so devoid of reality that I'm wearing a white shirt currently? If I said to him, this shirt is white, and he had convinced himself that it was yellow, that there'd be, you know, it would be a yellow shirt, and I'd be a liar and be perpetuating or disseminating fake news and all that other stuff. The other hand, he's just arrogant beyond belief, in which he's going to look at the white shirt I'm wearing and say, mine is better, and you know, and my buttons are bigger, and you know, we'd sort of get into this like stupid conversation. You're absolutely right. I mean, all joking aside, whether this is an arrogancy president or an arrogancy presidency or an ignorant presidency, neither is acceptable.
And it's just astounding that you would have the president of the United States not take any action.
Mm-hmm.
When the Justice Department, speaking of people who are doing their jobs, by the way, can we pause and speak about how, from a legal procedural point of view, that Bob Mueller is roasting Paul Manafort very slowly over his spit?
I was saying to somebody today, we were discussing this issue of, you know, when is Mueller going to come out and just nail Trump with something, presuming he does?
Well, bear in mind, they set a trial date for Manafort.
For
today.
Manafort, I think it was September 19th, 17th. If I remember. 17th.
Yeah.
I knew it was there, that middle of September period. But, you know, what I said to this person I was talking to is, if you think about it, think about how I'm not in any way suggesting Mueller is a snake, so don't misunderstand me. But think about the way that a python or a big snake will slowly wrap itself around the body of the prey that it has gotten itself in. And you know, it's not an instantaneous death. It's, again, to the degree that it's painful, I don't know. But it's just, it's slow and it's steady and it's methodical.
Inexorable.
And it happens. And you know it's going to happen. And you know, and I think that's the way that he's pursuing this. You know, and the more that people are turning themselves in, for lack of a better phrase, and that they are acknowledging that A, they lied. And look, among the most stupid things you could do is lie to a federal government official.
Much less lie while you're negotiating a plea deal.
For something else. So, you know, look, I absolutely agree with you. You know, do your job, get it done, etc. I've got one for you.
Sure.
And this will be a familiar, you know, kicking subject for me, so to speak. Look, if you've been following college sports of late, then you know that there is a brutal, brutal, brutal issue confronting major college basketball right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the federal investigation that makes pretty clear that some of America's top college basketball programs, whether it was the coaches, whether it was the assistant coaches, whether it was a combination, whether it was boosters, whatever the case might be, but that there has been a clear effort to funnel money illegally to either the players, their families, or somebody. And this is going to, this has the potential to be the sort of Black Sox scandal for college basketball. Again, those of you who know baseball know what the Black Sox scandal was. To me, really, what this ultimately comes down to, and this is where, to me, it's, you know, do your job. It's the NCAA has to get rid of this ridiculous 1950s, and that may be an insult to the 1950s, notion that the folks who compete in college sports on America's college campuses ought to be paid only tuition, room and board, books. Now, I am not saying tuition, room and board, and books is a bad gift, for lack of a better phrase.
Well, yeah, if
they
are scholar athletes and not athlete scholars. Which
right.
Now
right.
even that even being athlete scholars, that you know, the word scholars is in a much smaller font and italicized.
Yes. Well, you know, I hope what's going to come from this, and I think when it's all said and done, it's going to be a really ugly scenario for major college sports in this country, because I think we are going to be left with a really clear two-tiered system. And we're going to have the elite 70, 80 maybe programs, the Big Five conferences and a few other schools
sure.
that are going to be essentially on their own. They will be Division One or whatever you want to call it. And there will be a series of smaller divisions perhaps that come beneath it. But I think it'll be Division One where you're going to see the players are going to get paid, where there's going to be almost a professionalism associated right. with what they do. Now, what that means for schools that are smaller in smaller conferences that are basketball heavy, that sort of thing, places like RMU where you and I work,
right.
you know, whether those schools can continue to run out the number of Division One programs that they can, I don't know. Because I think what's going to happen is that the big schools are going to essentially form their own conferences, their own league, their own whatever you want to call it.
Right.
And play only among themselves. But it's high time that the NCAA gets past this nonsensical idea that not paying athletes who are, let's face it, in a good week, it's 20 hours a week.
Right.
And in the off season where, you know, John Rowland over here sitting to our left has the opportunity to, you know, when I say get a job, I don't mean it in a sarcastic vein, where he can work but still keep the financial aid he has. A lot of these guys can't do stuff like that. And that's right. just plain wrong. I mean, it's a form of indentured servitude. And
it really is.
And it's got to go.
You know, I'll my criticism of the NCAA is
legendary.
On the record. But I'll say this. I think, and I know there's some people who are going to not like this, but I think the faster we amateurize
mm-hmm.
sport at smaller colleges like RMU,
mm-hmm.
I think the better. Because then the emphasis can be back on scholar athletes.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm going to be 100% honest. If you are attending college purely in the hopes of being drafted into the NBA,
mm-hmm. or the NHL or
the
whatever.
NHL or right. the NFL right. or right. whatever, then let's just be upfront and honest and say you're not here to be a scholar.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. I'm not mm-hmm. saying college is for everybody,
mm-hmm.
but let's dispense with the formalities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the I don't know what you would call it, sort of a Potemkin degree.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, not to derail this, but I actually just got a breaking news alert
Uh-oh.
From Mrs. Fanning.
Uh-oh.
But this is NBC News.
You're allowed home? No. I couldn't resist.
No
and
yeah,
I love your wife like
no
a day
comment.
Is long. She is a neat lady. And
no
so,
collusion.
No. It's not fake news.
No. But apparently Robert Mueller is now, so this broke over the past 10 minutes, is now asking the witnesses he's interviewing very explicit questions about whether the president was aware before the public knew that the Democratic emails had been compromised and stolen, and whether he was involved in their strategic release. Now, this is interesting because his longtime aide, Roger Stone. Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
Look,
don't
anyone,
get me started
look,
on
anyone
that
who,
zero.
Well, anyone who has a tattoo of Richard Nixon on his back is mm-hmm. automatically suspect.
Mm-hmm.
Just got busted flat out lying, saying he'd mm-hmm. never been in contact with WikiLeaks. Yeah, he had.
Oops.
Direct contact.
And isn't it ironic that there were emails that were leaked of his direct communications with WikiLeaks?
Well, and by the way, this gets to my next do your job already part. This mm-hmm. is a shout out to Chief of Staff John Kelly at the White House. Well, hear me out.
All right.
Hear me out. Because I'm going to make a prediction right here and now.
Mm-hmm. I think I know where you're going with this.
That either Kelly remains chief of staff or Jared and Ivanka keep their positions, but not both.
I think you're absolutely right.
Because do you remember back in the house? You remember when we were doing this podcast in your office?
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about the primaries, and then we were getting into the general campaign, and the refrain from it was, but but her emails.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the whole thing was that Hillary Clinton couldn't be trusted with classified information.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now it comes out that practically half the staff at the West Wing cannot get security clearances,
mm-hmm.
precisely because they're considered blackmail risks, which says two things. Number one, there's some seriously sketchy in their past.
Is a euphemism for No. Just keep on going.
Trying to borrow your vocabulary
here. Thank you very much. Thank you.
But the second thing is these people cannot be trusted to place the welfare of the country over their own embarrassment.
Mm-hmm. I had been
convinced. And that speaks volumes.
I had been convinced for the longest time that the way that this Trump presidency was going to end was that essentially it was going to be you have two choices. Keep your financial empire, walk away from the presidency, or fight to keep the presidency and run the risk of losing the whole thing.
Well, I don't think he's got that choice anymore.
I am not convinced that it's going to be a choice anymore. I'm convinced that it's in the end, it's going to be, look, you have the choice between jail and walking away.
Maybe not even that. I'll tell you this. If the Republicans still, the Republican Party, I shouldn't say Republicans, but the Republican Party currently in Congress, if a majority of them still had their principles, there would have been a delegation sent to the White House ages ago.
Yes.
And then, yes, quite possibly, you would have gotten an arrangement like that.
Mm-hmm.
But because the position of at least the GOP establishment has been to hunker down, dig in their heels, and defend this president. And look, they're hardly the only ones to suffer from this. I mean, right. Remember in the 1990s, granted, it was a much less serious charge, but there were tons of Democrats who would absolutely steadfastly defend Bill Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
But that was, you know, that was minor league stuff.
In comparison. Yeah. Well, keep on going.
Yeah, let's just move on past that.
Wouldn't be prudent. Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord. We both said it simultaneously. Oh, no, we've been doing this for too long. This, ladies and gentlemen, is the final issue or the final episode of Upon Further Review of the podcast.
Prof, I'm having too much fun.
Because it appears as though we do actually are on the same wavelength, which is dangerous for wavelengths.
But the fact that had the Republican establishment stood up to the president, this would have been over by now.
But
now, because they haven't,
yeah.
And because Donald Trump is constitutionally incapable of ever, you know what? He's not even just incapable of admitting error. He's incapable of not claiming that he's right.
This goes back to the arrogance and ignorance comment exactly. I said earlier. Again, it's one of two things. And frankly, at this point, one is not better than the other. It's just the reality in which we live. But, you know, if we're going to be patting John Kelly on the back, pardon me, General Kelly, as he is referred to by the president.
Well, maybe it's not so much a pat as just like one touch.
Maybe it's one touch kind of thing. But, you know, I think in reality there also needs to be a bit of a kick in the pants to the chief of staff as well. Look, at some point, one of two things is true with this man. Either he is the upstanding, character-driven moral and ethical character that he has been presented to be, and he looks at this president and says, that's it. You and I are going to be sort of hostile or enemy combatants, for lack of a better word. Or he says, you know what, I have done enough to try to do what is best for the country. I'm out of here because I can't have my credibility go right down the commode when everything else goes down. It's one or the other with John Kelly.
Well, I think that ship has sailed.
He cannot continue to play both sides of this coin.
Well,
this is good for America, so I'm sticking around, and, oh, but this guy also has good moral character. It's not, you know, either stay or get lost.
Donald Trump's entire presidency has been a giant singularity.
Mm-hmm. Me.
Not just of ego, but a singularity that, you know, a singularity is a point in space where the gravity is so intense that not even light can move fast enough to escape it.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump is this abhorrent singularity of horrible, horrible morals.
Mm-hmm.
that is so intense that no reputation can survive being even in his proximity.
Mm-hmm.
Not least of which was this ridiculous tweet he sent out. By the way, ironically,
Witch Hunt?
Well, no. Talking about, he would have run into Parkland.
Oh, please.
With the bone spurs, apparently.
Oh, please. For those of you who didn't catch the or don't have the details associated with what Soren just mentioned.
Congratulations.
You're 48-ish hours ago, the president was addressing, I think it was the Governor's Association, wasn't it?
It was the Governor's Association.
The Governor's Association, who were all at the White House. I think all 50 were there. And he got on the discussion again about the Parkland shooting. And by the way, again, we're recording this podcast on Wednesday, the final day. Can you believe it? The final day of February. Wow.
Speaking of which, you go outside, you get hit with two thoughts so quick, they almost trip over each other. The first one is, my God, it's beautiful outside. And the second thought is, oh my God, it's 65 degrees. No, it's 65 degrees and sunny in February. Oh Lord, yes. We're all going to die.
Yeah, but remember, climate change is a hoax perpetuated by the Chinese. But anyhow, you didn't know that? But anyhow, the president said it. You should believe this man. He's obviously a man of integrity. But anyhow, this
stable
president,
genius.
Stable, very stable genius. This president said to the Governor's Association the other day, as he was railing again against the kids at Park or the security guards at Parkland High School. And by the way, the kids at that school went back to school today. And wow, I cannot imagine the conversations that must be taking place in some of those classrooms. That's an intense. Part of me as a journalist would love to be there. The other part of me is glad I'm nine states away or whatever right. It is between here and Florida. But he said to them, meaning the Governor's Association or the governors, that if he had been outside Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School on that fateful day 2 weeks ago, that he would have run in even without a gun to try to save those kids.
Yeah. No.
Now look, here's the thing. If
just put a sock in it, you withered day glow fraud.
Enough. Here's the thing.
This man is the biggest coward I have ever seen in my life.
If Barack Obama had said that, I'd believe him. If George Bush, 41, had sure. said it, I'd believe him. If Bill Clinton had said it, I'd believe him, even though Bill Clinton was not in good health when he was president of the United States.
Right.
He was overweight. He was,
I believe it if George W. Bush said it.
If the first President Bush, if he said it, I think I'd have believed him, not because I doubt the man, but because he was already knocking on the door of 70.
Right.
Ronald Reagan, if he'd have said it the first 4 years of his term, heck yeah, Reagan would have gone in. Right. And so down the line. I think you can make a case that if Carter would have, Ford would have.
Sure.
You can go down the list of our most recent 10 or 20 presidents. And I
in fact,
think
the only one you could probably say who wouldn't have gone running in is FDR, but that's
FDR
for something
for obvious
else.
Reasons. For obvious reasons, right.
Andrew Jackson would just beat the guy to death.
Andrew Jackson might have.
Well, bear in mind, he had nothing to fear because bullets had long ago lost their fear of Andrew Jackson.
That's true.
Wasn't there like four separate attempts and all of the guns misfired?
Well, no, in one incident, a gunman tried to assassinate Andrew Jackson. Mm-hmm. He had two pistols, both misfired. Again, because bullets were afraid of Andrew Jackson. By the way, interesting Andrew Jackson note. Near the end of his life, he was asked if he had any regrets. And if you know anything about Andrew Jackson, he should have had a long list of them,
mm-hmm.
starting with the Trail of Tears.
Mm-hmm.
He said he had two.
Mm-hmm.
That he didn't hang Henry Clay, and he didn't shoot John C. Calhoun. This is a man who lived his life as a soldier, duelist, and basically someone who took lives as often as he could, and his only regret was that he hadn't added two to his kill list.
But you know what? I will give the man credit for his honesty. Let's
Trent,
at least,
fair,
you know,
fair.
So, but, this again, and there's going to be an interesting national conversation about the what the security guards at that high school did and didn't do 2 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago today. Again, it happened on Valentine's Day with a sort of awful, morbid irony there. Yes, they're security guards. I am not dismissing that title. But I think it is fair to say that there is a difference between, and society has to accept this in my opinion. Again, for whatever bias I have.
It's our show. You can have whatever bias you want.
There is a cavernous gap between what we should expect a security guard to be capable of, and what we should be expect a police officer to be capable of. And I'm not saying that the security guard should have just stood there and do nothing or run away or hide or whatever. But for this president to be verbally just bashing this man up one side and down the other.
The same week, by the way, where his wife is saying we need to be nicer on social media.
Well, there's a whole other conversation about what the...
Well, that's true. I doubt they've spoken.
What the Trump presidents or the Trump marriage might look like these days. But, you know, we try to look for themes. We try to look for that idea of how can we tie seemingly disparate events each week together? And you and I are both big believers in the idea of personal responsibility.
Right.
No person is perfect. We are going to make mistakes, whether it's personally, whether it's professionally, whatever it's going to be. We are going to make mistakes. We are going to do things that we're going to look back on and say, Jesus, that was stupid.
All right.
And I shouldn't have done that.
And as long as you own up to it and try to redress it, you're okay.
You're good. You make a mistake, you own up to it. If you don't know something, you accept it or you admit it. You know, again, arrogance or ignorance, I'm not sure which it is, but the absence of that sort of character trait is just mind-numbing to me.
Well, we'll see. But yeah, I completely agree with you. You know, and this from the guy who pitched himself as the builder, the doer. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, great deals.
You can't hide what you are indefinitely.
Well, look, and the man has talked about his ability to make great deals with foreign leaders. Has he made one?
Great for whom?
Well, he was putting America first. I don't know what he was trying to do. No, seriously.
The Chinese are thrilled with the decisions we're making.
Oh, man.
This is what I have to leave with this, and I'm circling back to the first one.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. Now, I teach Russian history.
Duh.
I can translate Russian.
Duh.
I am not a Russophobe in any stretch of the imagination.
Nyet.
This country attacked ours.
Duh.
Using their military intelligence division.
Duh.
The Justice Department now says they can prove that in a court of law using available legally obtained evidence beyond a reasonable doubt. They could do it exactly 13 times. Okay.
And the fact that it's legally obtained evidence is kind of intimidating because what they can't say speaks way more than what they can.
Right. You know, here's all the stuff involving sketchy methods that everyone does, but we're not supposed to. Here's just the stuff that we got through, like FISA warrants.
Mm-hmm.
So they can prove this. And the simple fact of the matter is, could you fathom at any point an attack like this being organized by an adversarial power and the president of the United States not just doing nothing, but actively refusing to enforce a law passed by Congress directly to combat this very attack?
And then he turned around and doubled down, for lack of a better phrase. The vote, if the vote for sanctions, if I remember right, was 98-2.
Yeah, in the Senate?
In the Senate. And
it was similarly right. Insane in the House.
The vote being to penalize X number of Russians for their clear involvement in the meddling or the hacking or whatever the word is that your most interference, whatever you like best to explain what happened with the election in this country in 2016. The reason, in my opinion, the reason the man won't do it is that, again, it ties back to this idea that he cannot accept in any way, shape, or form that other factors, some good, some bad, contributed to his victory in November of 2016. He is absolutely convinced it was his persona, his character, his message, his that allowed that to happen.
The comedian Bill Maher made a good point. We are very close with Trump to getting dictator bingo.
Yes.
Like the only thing we need now, once he starts awarding himself medals and wearing a funky uniform, that bingo, that's where we are.
By the way, you think that could happen when he does that that veterans parade?
I'm afraid to. I will say this, though. It is now a legitimate open question as to whether or not, and I want everyone to think about this, the sitting president of the United States is an agent of the Russian government.
I don't think so, for what it's worth.
Right, but I'm just saying the fact that we have to ask this question, that there's so many decisions that are being made. I want to know what Putin's got on him.
Here's what I
really want to know.
Here's what I think. I don't think the man is deliberately in the pocket, accidentally in the pocket of the Russians. I really don't think it is. I think that he believes that he is not foolable, and I know that's not a word. I think
he has the best words, so I'm sure he's
best
used
words
it
exactly. I think he is convinced that he has that he actually has Putin over a barrel, and so I don't think he sees it as being
anyone's patsy.
We could find out 2 years from now all sorts of stuff. I don't think we will. I think we're going to find out at the end of the day that, again, it was arrogance or ignorance. It was not blackmail, bribery, threat, anything
if
like that.
If that is true, and I know we're running short on time, but if that is true, then that's almost more terrifying, that this guy will essentially hand over the keys to the country to anyone who will praise him.
And anyone who will do a deal with him that benefits Trump headquarters or whatever the heck.
Well,
the word
you do know what you do know what they call someone who is willing to sell out their country's national security for a quick buck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
On that cheerful note,
mm-hmm. He is
Soren Fanning,
who is
associate professor of world history at Robert Morris University and your friendly neighborhood historian.
There you go. And the gentleman to my left is
John Rowland.
And you are
a person.
He ain't so wrong.
I go here. That's about my biggest qualification.
Do you notice how John is both brutally frank and
frankly brutal?
Frankly brutal, but never sort of pats himself on the back.
No, he doesn't.
Should we pat you on the back? Not literally, figuratively?
I can't. That's your choice.
All right.
I'll probably reject it, but I'll let you.
But in all fairness, he's equal opportunity because I don't see him patting anyone else on the back either.
This is true. So he is John Rowland, the producer extraordinaire of Upon Further Review.
And our voice of reason.
And our voice of reason. And I am Anthony Moretti. With that, episode 22 is in the
proverbial books.
Bank of Russia something. No. is in the bank and set for... I guess we won't do episode 23 next week because it is spring break at the institution. Wait,
we might. We'll talk about it.
We might. Ooh, try the phones. That 19th century thingamajigger.
We have automobiles too. We have horseless carriages.
Ooh,
yeah.
Cool.
Although they contain several horses inside.
Whoa, that's true. See, I told you. He's deep. He's a thinker.
He's our mixing board Buddha.
That's it. And with that.
We will
imagery.
See you either next week or the week following
on Upon Further Review with
the Podcast Profs.
Indeed.